This week on Daiwa, we're headed to Linn County. A 40-year-old cold case is solved thanks to a family genealogy website.
Welcome to Daiwa, the first Iowa-focused true crime podcast, where there's 99 counties and a murder in every one. These are your hosts, Beth LaValle and Allie Tulin.
Okay, we're in Linn County.
All right, I know Linn County is definitely a big one in Iowa.
It's a big county and it's a big case today, so get ready.
So exciting.
Linn County is the second most populous county in Iowa and home to Cedar Rapids. If you aren't from Iowa, you may recognize Cedar Rapids as the Iowa city that's known for terrible disasters. They've had major flooding and a derecho that made national news all in the last 10 to 20 years.
I definitely remember the floods, and the derecho is hard to forget, but so crazy that the city has endured all that.
Yeah, I was even back for the derecho, although I was in Des Moines. Oh, I wasn't in Cedar Rapids, but it was
still
crazy.
Pretty bad.
It was actually crazy. Okay, so let's get started.
All right, so Michelle Martinko was an 18-year-old high school student. She had blonde, wavy hair, kind of in the Farrah Fawcett style, and really was beautiful. Michelle was the youngest daughter of Albert and Jeanette Martinko, and she had an older sister named Janelle. Michelle's a senior at Kennedy High School in Cedar Rapids and was said to be an above-average student. She had joined the twirling team and performed in the choir and school plays.
I don't even know what a twirling team is. Do you?
I think it's like during a high school pep rally or like a band, there's like a twirler. Do you know what I mean?
Is it like a la Lizzie McGuire?
Yes. That's what I'm thinking.
She did like ribbon twirling?
I think it's the twirl minus the ribbon. I think it's just like a stick.
Oh, okay.
Did you ever see that? No?
Like a baton twirler?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. She did seem very cute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so December 19th, 1979, Michelle went to a banquet for her high school choir at the Sheraton Inn in Cedar Rapids. At the banquet, she asked a friend if she wanted to join her on a shopping trip to the Westdale Mall, which had recently opened that year. Her friend said no, so Michelle went to the mall with $180 on her to buy a new winter coat. She was so cute and trendy. She was wearing a black V-neck jersey material dress with a matching black scarf tied around her neck. She also had on dark hose, black open-toed heels, earrings, a few rings, and had a brown hooded jacket made of rabbit. And she was carrying a leather shoulder purse with her. She was last seen at 9 p.m. outside of a jewelry store in the mall.
At 2 a.m., Michelle still had not returned home, and her father, Albert, reported her missing and began to search for her with the police. At 4 a.m., now December 20th, police did find the Martinko family's tan 1972 Buick Electra in the northeast corner of the mall parking lot by the JCPenney. Michelle was found inside, collapsed over the passenger seat, and had been stabbed to death.
Michelle's sister Janelle said her mother had to identify Michelle's body on December 20th, 1979, after police found the teen. On Friday, December 21st, an article from the Cedar Rapids Gazette reported that there were no leads. Funeral services for Michelle were held on Saturday, December 22nd at St. Pius in Cedar Rapids. Her high school choir sang at the services. A few nights after the murder, a Cedar Rapids television station aired its regular showing of Kennedy High School Choir. Some viewers reported that it was eerie to see Michelle among the featured singers.
When the autopsy came back, it reported that Michelle was stabbed with a sharp object about 8 times, but failed to say if it was a knife or how long the blade was. Also, according to the medical examiner, Michelle was not molested, and she had enough cash in her purse that police had ruled out robbery as the motive.
In an article on December 28, 1979, the assistant chief of the Cedar Rapids Police Department, James Barnes, wanted to clear rumors and confirm the following details. 1. Police had no suspects in custody. Several people had been interviewed and cleared after polygraph tests. 2. Sex and robbery were ruled out as motives for the murder. 3. Police had not ruled out that Michelle's murderer was a woman. She did have defense wounds on her arms, which indicated Michelle had tried to fight off her attacker. And finally, Michelle's steps the day of her murder had been traced to about 9 p.m.
Also, some people had reported receiving phone calls where they were harassed and said that they had heard Michelle received similar phone calls before her death. Police said Michelle had received no such calls as far as they knew.
Assistant Chief James Barnes also had confirmed that some evidence was recovered at a store at Westdale Mall and was going to be processed in a private lab. He refused to describe the evidence. He also refused to disclose if fingerprints had been found in the car.
On January 25th, 1980, another article from the Cedar Rapids Gazette titled New Theory, Plea in Martinko Case, discusses police entertaining the idea that Michelle's car may have been moved. Again, Michelle's car was found behind the JCPenney's store, but in this article, James Barnes said police were exploring a new theory because Michelle's car may have been parked in front of the JCPenney's store when she first went into the mall.
Again, Michelle was driving her family's 1972 tan Buick Electra. It had a gold top and light green bottom. If you do a search of this model, it looks like a very typical car from the 70s. Barnes did not give any specific details as to why police were entertaining or curious about this theory, but they asked for any person parked in the area at the time of Michelle's death to contact the Detective Bureau of the Cedar Rapids Police Department.
It was reported that people in Cedar Rapids began altering their shopping habits after Michelle's murder. For example, women weren't shopping late at night by themselves. So in February of 1980, a $10,000 reward was put out. However, it was still unclaimed in October of 1980. There were other newspaper articles saying that the police had asked for witnesses to come forward from two vans believed to have been in the area. They reportedly used hypnotism on witnesses to see if they could recall anything more, and the police even tried psychics. The search continued for years, but it seemed like no new evidence or witnesses were coming forward.
So now, fast forward to 2018, 39 years later. In an article from the Des Moines Register, Michelle's sister Janelle said she and her husband were on their way to meet their new grandchild in Florida when she received a call from an investigator with the Cedar Rapids Police Department. After 39 years of investigation, they were able to use DNA evidence from blood found on Michelle's dress to narrow it down to three brothers who were all living in Iowa. A few weeks later, Jerry Lynn Burns was arrested. He was 66 and living in Manchester, Iowa, which is about an hour north of Cedar Rapids.
Authorities had made a male profile with the DNA from the crime scene. After genealogy websites proved helpful with catching the Golden State Killer, Iowa investigators asked Paraben Nano Labs, which had access to hundreds of thousands of public genetic samples, to see if there was a match in its database. A woman in Washington was linked to the suspect, and authorities eventually zeroed in on Burns. Investigators covertly collected a straw used by Burns to test his DNA. And I'm sorry, Beth, but I had to add this in. Guess where they found the straw that Burns had used?
Tell me, please.
It was none other than Iowa's favorite chain, Pizza Ranch.
Oh my god. It's the best!
Gotta love it.
So Burns would have been 25 at the time of Michelle's death. Authorities said at the time of his arrest, Burns said he could not offer a, quote, plausible explanation for why his DNA was found at the crime scene. There is no known connection between Burns and Michelle. Burns's arrest prompted a round of whispering about two of his family members. Burns's wife, Patricia, died by suicide in 2008, just 10 years before his arrest. His cousin, Brian Burns, vanished on December 19, 2013, exactly 34 years after Michelle was killed. However, Delaware County Sheriff John LeClaire said authorities, quote, don't have any reason to suspect Burns in either case, unquote.
In February of 2020, Jerry Burns was found guilty of first-degree murder. I know we have a lot of questions for Taps with this case, especially around the genealogy site being used. You ready to call him?
Let's do it.
Hey, Taps, how are you?
Hi, Allie, how are you?
That was gross. All right, so today we are talking about Linn County and the Michelle Martinko case. Do you know, would there have been any security footage in 1979? Or when
there could have been.
When was that introduced?
Before then, and the video quality was not really great, and most of the cameras were fixed. They didn't pan or do anything like that. But there were cameras, especially in the banking industry at that time.
Do you feel like today most cities, like cops can go in and find footage from any street corner?
Almost. It depends on the city. But in our particular jurisdiction, we have cameras in every town that we cover.
Wow.
Big question for you. Where do you stand on using DNA evidence in genealogy sites to solve crimes?
I am for anything that solves a crime. Hmm. And so this technology has availed itself. Why would we not use it? And so it's, and I mean, obviously it is solving crimes.
Have you ever used anything like this?
No. When I was doing homicide, DNA was just coming into vogue, and these Ancestry and 23andMe's and whoever were not around. But one of my old cold cases just got solved by the cold case guys looking at some sites and pulling in a guy. So, I mean, it's cool stuff.
Do you get jealous about that?
Well, I knew who the bad guy was in that case, but we just could come up with enough evidence. So they arrested the guy we thought did it, but it was one of those cases we went to the prosecutors and they said, no, you got to have more evidence.
So you don't think it's unlawful to use the sites without warrants?
No. And what I'll compare it to is the Supreme Court's case on garbage. Narcotics investigators will do trash polls, where they have a suspected house that's doing narcotic activity or drug activity, and they'll wait till the people put out their trash. And then they'll either act like the garbage guy or even sneak around and just get it. And they go through the trash and find products of that drug deal. What the Supreme Court said is when you put that stuff in the garbage can and put it out to your street to have it taken away, you have given up your expectation of privacy. And I believe the same thing on DNA sites. When you register your DNA on these sites, I believe you have given up your expectation of privacy under the Fourth and Fifth Amendment.
But what happens if it's not them uploading their DNA? What if it's a family member? They don't have say in that.
So it's spurious. You're right. I just don't see a problem with it, because it's people that volitionally are putting their stuff up, and you solve the crime through that. I mean, you would still have to trace it back to the person that you believe committed the crime. And so there'd be some extra steps involved. But I mean, right now we're taking DNA from prisoners in the prison system without a warrant. You know, obviously, if you join the military, you give up your DNA. So there's a lot of ways that people have given up their DNA without legal process.
I didn't think about that.
So right now, any police unit or homicide unit can go and use a genealogy site to try and solve cold cases, to your knowledge?
To my knowledge, that's correct. And I would have to go back and review the case law recently. But I don't recall any recent cases that have affected that.
Is there an expense on the, like, on the detective side in using DNA profiling?
It's extremely expensive, and it does affect decisions on a case. So especially if you go to mitochondrial, which is very, very expensive, in many cases, detectives won't submit that DNA evidence for evaluation unless they really believe they have a possibility of solving it. The only other thing I would say, though, is like state investigators and federal investigators that have their own DNA labs, and I'm sure some of the bigger police departments around the country, they wouldn't have that expense, obviously, because they employ those people and they can do the work.
So what you're saying is they should be concerned about using sites like 23andMe if I am a murderer.
Yeah, I would... My legal advice to you as a murderer would be not to register your DNA.
Okay.
But also if you're not a murderer.
I don't like the sites. I think I just don't have any guarantees on what security they are putting on your information and how they're going to store it. Can it be hacked? I've heard, again, through the grapevine, I can't verify this officially, but I've heard the Chinese are involved in one of these sites. They have money in one of these sites. I mean, I'd just be really nervous not knowing what they're doing with this information.
Yeah. And it's also new, I think, is
right.
I'm also concerned about that.
How do you keep evidence good or like an acceptable quality for over 39 years?
Climate controlled. If it's blood evidence, it has to be packaged in paper, not plastic, so that it doesn't get moisture and condensed inside. But as long as you keep it in a climate-controlled facility, in our particular facility right now, we have two cases, one from about 1966, and I think the other one's about 1981, that the evidence is still sitting in our evidence storage area.
One of the things I learned on this case was that they kept the Martinko's car. Is that common to keep cars involved in, I guess, murders, but also other crimes? And then what happens to the cars afterwards? Or like, what if the family needed that car?
How long did they keep it, did they say?
I believe it was still in storage, like when they solved the case.
And they believe that's where the crime scene was inside the car?
It was inside the car, yeah.
Well, that's probably why they kept it. So they used the car and kept it as the scene of the crime. And again, we're told in homicide cases to keep evidence in perpetuity forever.
Oh, okay.
So they would keep it that long. Now in Iowa, they could apply for the state crime victim compensation fund. If the car, you know, we got to have this car to get back and forth to work or whatever. And the state might compensate them for it.
I just imagine it's hard and expensive to keep cars.
It would be horribly hard.
So the Des Moines Register reported in September of 1986 that the Iowa Supreme Court rejected claims made by Michelle's father that the shopping center was negligent because they did not provide, quote, reasonable security for his daughter. What are your thoughts on that?
So I have not read the case, and I don't, you know, without shifting through the evidence and things, it would be difficult. I can make a hypothesis that if you want to sue someone for not providing reasonable security, you would have to prove that the shopping mall had a duty to protect her. And that would, I think, would be a difficult jump to make in a case, to say that the shopping center has a duty to everybody that walks on their property to protect them. I just think that would be a tough case to win. But again, I don't know.
Do you think that's why shopping malls employ security guards now?
I think the standard of care of customers in malls and places like that has increased because of litigation, I'm sure. And so, yeah, I think some of those places employ those people for that reason. But it's just hard to guess.
What are the odds that this was a random attack? Or do you think that Burns knew Michelle?
I I'm not real familiar with the case, but I don't think there was any connection between the two.
He would have been 25 at the time of the murder, but he was from a different town.
Right.
But he's not speaking about the case now.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's just a hypothesis because I don't know the evidence, but I would guess that he did not know her and he was some kind of predator of some type. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting to see if he's been involved in any other crimes of this type.
So that's an interesting thing because his wife died by suicide in 2008, 10 years before his arrest for this case. And then his cousin vanished in 2013. But the Delaware County Sheriff said authorities don't have any reason to suspect Burns in either case.
It's interesting.
Yeah,
I hope, and I'm sure they did, looked at it very hard to see once if there was some kind of connection. But it's just interesting that there would be that many deaths around him.
Okay, I think that's it for Linn County, unless you have anything else, Sally.
I don't. Any final thoughts?
No, not really. I mean, this is a big victory when they can grab somebody on a crime that old. So it's mm-hmm. good for the family.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for joining us. Talk to you again soon.
Okay.
Oh, hello there. As a marketer, I hate promotions like this.
Same and same.
But I love content.
Me too.
So if you like our content, give us a like, follow, share, subscribe, note, fax, literally anything you think would help us continue making Daiwa a success.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.